crumpled across Rourke's knees. And there she is. I figured you'd be in your office, or watching a vid. Work's done for the day. For me, in any case. And watching a vid's more fun with you. Reading's a nice solitary choice. He gave the cat a nudge that had Galahad rolling over on his back. You've work yet? Yeah, sorry. He got up, setting the book aside, walked to her. You'll tell me about it. She moved into him, wrapped her arms around him, just held there. Sometimes it hits me especially. What does? That I have this to come home to. She'd tell him about it, she thought, knowing from experience that it would help line up her thoughts. I'll wager you haven't eaten. You'd win that bet. It has to be Italian. The last interviews were in an Italian restaurant, and it smelled like heaven coated in red sauce. I can take care of that. Pour yourself a glass of that wine, he advised as he eased back. It's exceptional. Then you can tell me about it while we eat. We? Didn't you eat already? I did some work. I did some reading. It's not that late, he added, and started toward the kitchen. Especially for an Italian meal. She poured the wine. He was right, as usual. Exceptional. And while he programmed the meal, she started on her murder board. Your victim? He glanced at the ID shot on the board as he carried domed plates to the table by the window. She was lovely. Yeah, an actress, theater, doubled as a waitress at Broadway Babies. Ah, the place where they sing while they dish up the pasta. He went back into the kitchen, came out with the salad, bread. That's the one. Weird, but people sure looked happy. He glanced back at the board after he set the rest on the table. Psycho? Was she hacked to death in the shower? No, but that's what she was watching when somebody jabbed a thin, sharp blade into the base of her skull. That smells really good. She stepped over. She could work her way through a salad if the reward was pasta. One of the vid palaces in Times Square, she said as she sat. Early evening show in the classic vid theater. Her name was Chanel Rylan. And she told him of murder and misery while they ate. He listened, with little comment, until Eve cleared the salad bowls and he lifted the domes on one of his wife's personal favorites, spaghetti and meatballs. As he knew her body language intimately, he noted she relaxed by a few degrees even before she wound the first forkful of pasta. Your conclusion would be a target-specific victim, with the emergency call to the friend, the cap on that stone. Bogus emergency, Eve said with a mouthful of pasta. Pretty exquisite timing. It is. Watching her relax with the meal made him glad he'd waited for her. And the choice of that timing. The shower scene. The shocker. The murder of what the unsuspecting audience believes is the central character, 30 minutes into the vid. That 45 seconds of stunning violence. How do you know that? She poked her fork in the air before stabbing a meatball. 30 minutes in, 45 seconds. It's one of those things you pick up. I have no doubt that in the single viewing you had of the vid with me a year or so ago, your cop brain would have estimated that timing very precisely. You're not a cop, as you like to remind me. Happily. But I live with one, and would make another wager. She's already concluding the purpose of that exquisite timing. Rich guys always making sure bets. She ate more pasta. 45 seconds. During which anybody who had an ass in a chair would be completely focused on the screen, or have their hands slapped over their eyes like Peabody on her first viewing, The timing, the method say target specific. The victim herself, with a shake of her head, Eve picked up her wine. Tell me about her. Happy, hard-working, talented. Three of the top words her friend, her parents, her employer, her co-workers all used to describe her. Sexually, she batted for both teams, but didn't take the game too seriously. The only long-term ex moved to Canada years ago. Career deal. No big drama, according to her friend, and he'd have no motive to come back and stab her to death. But you'll look at him. You've got to look. She was up for a part, a bigger one than usual, so I'll look at whoever else is up for it. He knew her. The tone, the body language, the look in those cop's eyes. But... okay, it's target-specific. You can't discount that bullshit dog emergency that had the person sitting beside her leaving the theater for several minutes. The timing of that, the fact the killer sat right behind her, which indicates he either followed her there or knew she'd be there. That's no random stab in the dark. Literally. He nodded as he ate. And again, but... there had to be countless, less risky ways to kill her. She's a night creature, right? Either coming out of the theater after a performance at night, or from the restaurant. Walking home from the restaurant after shift, from the theater after a show. Grab her, stab her, and book it. But this was dramatic, right? And really risky. And it depended on everything falling into place. Which it seems to have done. Yeah. She stabbed at another meatball. But what if somebody decides to sit beside the killer? What if the friend decides to ignore the call, even for a few minutes? What if somebody else walks out at the same time as the killer? If you're going to plan as well as he or she did, those are risks that have to be weighed in. So why go to all that trouble? Take all that time to find that moment when there are easier ways. The killer enjoys or craves the risk and the drama? Maybe, yeah. And I've got to tug on that. And maybe the method, the precision of it, the moment of it, were all as specific as the victim. Maybe, shit, maybe they had sex during that scene sometime in the past, and it meant more to him or her than it did to the victim. Maybe he'd seen her in that theater before, and something she said, did, the way she looked, triggered something. How long before the showing are the layouts of vids announced? She sat back for a moment, picked up her wine, lifted the glass toward him. That's a good question, Mr. Civilian. 3 months. They set the classic vids up 3 months ahead, advertised them in theater and online. And before you ask, the victim and her friend had a routine, and going to that vid on that night fell right into it. Plus, both of them blasted it on their social media feeds. Going to Psycho with my bestie. Girls' night at the Bates Motel. I'll never understand why people do that stupid shit, but they do. Eve paused, ate a little more. She's coming across as a decent human being, one who enjoyed her life, her work, had a nice circle of casual friends, and that bestie. He ended that. And so far, while the method says she was a target, nothing's popping to show why. What can I do to help? I'm not sure there's much at this stage with this one. Throw me a bone. She sat back with her wine again, studied him as she sipped. You could just go back to your book. Or? On a half laugh, she sipped again. Okay, or. You could run the background on the ex, check any travel over the last couple days. Eliminate him or nudge him onto the list. Damien Forsyth, currently living and working in the Calgary area of Canada. He's a regular on some series, The enduring. That's simple enough. What's on your agenda? A deeper look into the Vic. So far, she's not telling me much. Some basic checking on her friend, the pet clinic and staff, a few runs on staff at the restaurant, and the play, The Other Contenders, she was auditioning for. That's quite a bit. Mostly just routine. Well, then, I'll see to my assignment. Rising, he looked back at the board. Sometimes, there's just no logical reason. But there's always a reason. 3. With a pot of black coffee, Eve settled into the work. Routine, yes, and some of it tedious, but routine mattered, demanded structure and direction, and tedium could lead to rewards. Not so much this time, she thought as she worked her way through the life of Chanel Rylan. Nothing stood out, nothing rang a bell, other than a handful of traffic violations, including a minor accident, no injuries, prior to moving to New York. She had no bumps. Slightly above average student, with stellar marks in drama, theater, dance, music, starring roles in school plays, some community theater. No medical issues that showed up on a standard run. No pregnancies, no rehab. Financially, Eve mused, she'd done okay. And obviously, wasn't in it for the dough. Her outlay for clothes, rent, the voice, acting, and dancing lessons, she continued, ate up most of her income. Eve shifted to Lola Kowalski. Lola had two bumps, two arrests for protesting animal rights. Currently, and for the past 3 years, she'd worked as one of the three rotating vets at Pet Care. Previously, she'd studied for her license and worked as a veterinary assistant at Pet Care. So that showed either loyalty or an appreciation for routine. Eve finished it out. Financially, the vet did better than the actress-waitress, but the vet sure wasn't rolling in it, as Rourke came in. He poured himself a mug of Eve's coffee. I sent the details on the X to your file. Give me a roundup. His only bump, from your standpoint, along the way, was a charge of drunk and disorderly. This after a bachelor party. He's had a couple of high-profile romances since moving to Calgary, and also keeps a residence in New L.A. The romances might be quite sincere, or the result of a publicity campaign. His star seems to be rising. He gets good reviews, gives clever interviews, and appears to have the respect of his current cast and crew. Rourke eased a hip onto a leg of her command center. Not only hasn't he traveled out of Canada in the last week or so, he was, at the time of your murder, in front of cameras, shooting a scene. You didn't get that from a run.
I didn't, no.
I got that when I noticed I'm acquainted with one of the producers on the series. Aren't you acquainted with everybody?
At times it seems as though.
In any case, he continued, I tagged him up, chatted a bit, and was able to wind it around to how things were going on the set and so on. Eve nodded approval. Better that way than direct. The ex is going to hear about it before much longer, but better to ease the info out without adding murder to it. So I thought. When I asked, he mentioned they'd just wrapped a key scene only an hour before, one they'd worked on most of the day. I was treated to nearly a bloody play-by-play of the shoot, the setup, the technical challenges, and so on, and to the characters therein. Damien Forsythe's character played an integral part in it. He didn't make sense anyway. We'll cross him off.
Thanks.
With a shake of his head, Rourke drank more coffee. You owe me thanks, as the man blathered on for 20 minutes. Eve shot a finger at him. You asked for it.
I did. I can't deny it. I'll be a glutton for punishment and say give me someone else to run. Eve glanced down at her notes. Annalisa Bacardo. On a frown, Rourke lowered his mug. That name seems familiar. You're probably acquainted. She owns the restaurant where the Vic worked. The singing waiter place. Something. I can't quite snag it up. He rose, walked around to sit at her auxiliary unit. Seconds later, he leaned back. Yes, of course. Eve picked up her coffee, smirked. She's a little old for you, Ace. Age means nothing to the heart. Or the dick. I'd be insulted for my dick if that weren't completely true. However, in this case, I've never met the woman, much less had any part of my anatomy involved with her. I have heard of her. He swiveled his chair toward Eve, sat back a bit. About 30 years ago, Annalisa Bacardo lit up Broadway. A genuine diva. Multiple Tony Awards. Her name alone could make or break a play. Musicals were her forte, and she translated that talent to the screen a time or two, to exceptional reviews. How come she's not still lighting things up instead of running a restaurant? She was involved, personally and professionally, with Justin Jackson, another towering talent. They didn't always perform together, but when they did... magic. Rourke flicked his fingers in the air. You can read about it if you like. Just keep going. They didn't marry, but lived together, had a child together. A daughter, he said, glancing at the screen to corroborate his memory. When the child was about 3, and Annalisa was in rehearsals for a new production, Justin walked the girl to the park. On the way, a car jumped the curb, struck both of them. Killed both of them. Oh, Jesus. She hasn't performed since, that I know of. I didn't realize she owned Broadway Babies. Curious, he did another search. She owns it under the name Lost Angels. She said the staff were her children, Eve remembered, her family. And I guess they are. I've confirmed she was in the restaurant at the time of the murder, but this gives me a better sense of her. Sitting back, Eve scanned the screen, picked up her coffee. Then with a hiss, swiveled to face Rourke. I'm getting nothing from any connections, from anybody who'd be connected to a connection. Target specific. Eve pushed up and away to pace, to think on her feet. All current evidence points there, and target-specific generally equals personal. But it doesn't feel personal. Not in method, not in background of Vic. So, potentially, the victim represents a type, or was a surrogate. Mira territory. She paused by the board. I need to talk to her. The vid. Was that just luck of the draw, or also specific? The research into the victim could have started back when the schedule of vids was announced. The vid becomes the trigger. But then, if so, how does the killer latch onto Rylan in the first place? Rourke waited a beat to determine if she had asked the question to herself or to him. Decided it was both. I imagine there's a subscription service. A what? Like a season buy. So many tickets purchased in advance, and a sign up for tickets to one slated to show. Like season tickets for baseball. Shit. She double-timed it back to her comp to run a search. Rourke beat her to it. Rylan belonged to the theater's Golden Ticket Rewards program. Show off. We do what we do. Buy a package of 25 tickets per year, get one free, an automatic 10% discount at concessions, A monthly newsletter, an assortment of benefits, Rourke added. They probably split it, Rylan and Kowalski. I can verify that, but that's what they did.
So, the killer maybe buys the same package.
I'm going to want to see the subscription list. Caesar there often enough to focus in on her. Maybe he makes a pass she deflects. But, tapping her fist on the workstation, she shook her head. It wasn't sexual. The killing wasn't sexual, so that doesn't hold up for me. The on-screen killing, that's sexual. Killer spies on victim through peephole, enters when Vic's naked and vulnerable in the shower. Knife penetrates. A lot. The on-screen murder provides the sexual component?
I don't know.
I don't think so. But I'll talk with Mira. To me, this was quick, nasty business. In the dark. The Vic's facing away, not toward. She's fully dressed. The killer penetrates, yeah, but it's one stab. On screen, it's... Eve made a decent mimic of the shower scene's repeated shriek while she mimed jabbing repeatedly with a knife.
Murder usually makes sense, she continued,
even if it turns out to be crazy shithouse rat sense. So far, I've got a victim with no known enemies or bitter, even mildly annoyed exes, no big potfuls of money or influence, no apparent knowledge of some dastardly deed or connection thereto, no sexual component. But at the same time, the killer knew her, or took the time, made the effort to learn her routine or habits, as well as the routine and habits of her roommate.
She stands for something. Someone, Eve finished. It's all that makes crazy shithouse rat sense.
Then it seems to me you've shaken out quite a bit in a few hours.
Maybe.
Or maybe I'm off base, and the killer jerked off while anticipating the shower scene and the murder, then shot his wad of sexual component in his boxers when he jabbed the sharp into the base of Ryland's skull.
That's a visual I'd just as soon not have playing in my head.
Or, Eve rose, circled the board again. She's up for a part. She's beaten out others for parts before.
And lost out to others, I assume.
Yeah, but we'll stick with beating out. It's a circle, a community. Though some likely come in, others likely give up, but you'd get to know each other. If you're up for the same part, odds are you've been up against each other before. Her co-workers at the restaurant didn't ring for me at all, but they've been up for the same part over the years. Maybe someone had enough, or someone went desperate. Have to have this one, or I'm finished. Have to have it, or I can't pay the rent, whatever. Have to have it. Not so much time or effort needed to learn the victim's routine and habits. To get information on the roommate, you're in the same club already.
Wouldn't it make more sense to wait and see who got the part?
Eyes on the board, on Chanel Rylan. Eve fisted her hands on her hips. Desperate makes for crazy shithouse rat sense. It's impossible to disagree. So I talked to her agent. I talked to whoever's in charge of the auditions, and we see where there's overlap. It wasn't sex, a twisted version of love. It wasn't rage. It wasn't for financial gain, revenge, or as far as it shows, to preserve a secret. It sure as hell wasn't random. That leaves jealousy as the most likely motive.
What part was she up for? Rourke wondered.
Some new play. Second lead. Not even the headliner. Rourke rose, drew her in against him.
You'll just keep circling the board and the same thought pattern. You can't talk to anyone else until tomorrow. Dig into it until... Let's shut it down for the night. Everyone I talked to who knew her liked her. But they're actors, so they all know how to put on a show. He tapped a finger to the dent in her chin. You're a cop, and you excel at seeing through a show. Yeah, and what I saw came off as real. People liked her. Still, somebody killed her, specifically, and more, did it in a way that involved unnecessary risks. Something's missing. If there is, you'll find it, but not tonight. No, not tonight. She drew back to shut down, and abruptly remembered. We're Somerset free. And, since I'm sure you're interested, he's very much enjoying his winter break. Yeah, great. We have to have sex. Well, now, if you insist. When he reached for her, she gave him a light shove back. Not so fast, pal. I've got logistics to consider. It's all right. I remember how it's done very well and can walk you through it. We'll see who walks who where. I've got it. Count to 30. He let out a laugh. Seriously? You want sex or not? Arching his eyebrows, his gaze locked on hers, he said, One. She gave him a hot, noisy kiss, then jogged out of the room. He counted it off as he shut down her machine, the fireplace, the lights, strolled into his own office to do the same. When he hit 30, he stepped into the hall, spotted one of her boots. Ha! He walked to it, picked it up, continued in that direction. He found the second boot after a turn to the right. Amused, he picked that up as well. So, she's after a game. He'd play. He could, of course, simply ask the house system where she was, or call up the monitors and see for himself. But that would be cheating. He followed the trail, found her jacket on a doorknob. Though he recognized a ploy, he also understood the double bluff, so he opened the door, ordered the lights. No, they wouldn't be making good use of the big gel bed in that particular guest room. He put her jacket and the boots on a bench in the hall, continued on. When he'd worked with architects and engineers on the design of the house, when he'd watched it built layer by layer, he hadn't imagined himself wandering through it some night, following the trail of his wife's stripped-off clothing. And there was a sock. He paused to study a painting he'd stolen, oh, 6 or 7 years before. A lonely hooded figure crossing a windswept moor under brooding skies. He'd taken it for his own collection, as it had pulled at him, that resolve, the loneliness, while his primary target of a small exquisite Corot he'd sold for a very tidy fee. Then he'd met his cop, his mate, the love of his life. And he'd arranged for the painting of the lonely figure to be found and returned to its owner. Then he'd bought it legitimately. He'd done the same with the other bits and bites he'd still had inside the plump pies baked on the shady side of the line. Divested of them. Given up those dark little thrills. A small price to pay, he thought as he moved on. Found the second sock for the woman now leading him through the maze of his own home. She'd never failed to fascinate, frustrate, and fulfill. Doubling back, was she, he mused, spotting some loose credit she'd likely pulled out of her pocket, and he spotted a door open an inch or so to lure him. Sliding the credits into his own pocket, he moved on, as he knew the room to be linen storage for that section of the house. Then doubled back himself, as he wouldn't put it past her to decide they'd have sex in a bloody linen closet. Apparently not, he thought, when all he found inside were linens. The game took on fresh interest when he found her trousers tossed over the banister of a stairway leading up to the next floor. Intrigued, he started up, mentally going over the floor plan. Ballroom level. Sitting rooms, baths, a staging area for catering, storage, a small efficient kitchen and butler's pantry, again for catering. Another separate area for any staff hired for a party to break or gather. Another storage area, a game room. The ballroom, of course. He found her shirt hanging over the door of one of the sitting rooms, considered, and decided that after the hunt, a sitting room ranked very low on the scale. Then turned the other way. He found her pocket debris, the lockpicks he'd given her, her pocket knife, her communicator, her link, even her badge, all together on the hunt table outside the wide doorway, and stepped inside the ballroom. She sat in the shadowy light, perched on the arm of one of the sofas. "I wasn't wearing enough to cover the house," she said. "Next time, I'll have to gear up." "You managed to cover considerable ground, nonetheless." "Lights on, 10%. The grand chandeliers overhead flickered on, soft, quiet light. She wore her white support tank, her simple white panties, and her weapon harness. Long, long legs, tousled hair, a smug, smug smile. Was it a wonder he went hard as rock instantly? "I've never been up here when there hasn't been a party or the prep for one. How come you have furniture in here when nothing's going on?" "Something's about to." She grinned at him. "That's a point, a good point. And so you come to the only area of the house without an actual bed. Anybody can have sex on a bed," she pointed out. "How many have sex in the middle of a big-ass ballroom?" She rose, walked to the center of the room. She pointed at the floor. "Right in the damn middle." "We might as well do it right, then." He moved to a panel, flipped it open, danced his fingers over the controls within. The enormous fireplace flared on, blazed. Music, something low, with a lot of bass, streamed on. She grinned again. "Not bad. That's not bad." He crossed to her, hooked an arm around her waist, yanked her against him. When she linked hers around him, prepared to drop to the floor with him, he circled her into a dance. "Damn it," she let out a sigh. "That's really not bad at all." It might have been dreamy, the music, the lights, the man. Then she remembered she was dancing in her underwear while wearing her weapon. She tipped her head back, started to make some snarky comment about just that. He stopped the words with his mouth. Circling, swaying. With a long, long kiss, deep and lush, with body pressed to body in a perfect fit. It topped dreamy by several points. What he brought her in a room built for glamour, for crowds, the simple and the intimate. He felt her slide into the moment with him, the just us, anytime and anywhere, and always. He couldn't say why the fun and the foolishness she'd begun had struck such a strong, clear, romantic chord in him. Now he could take that moment, this moment, their moment, to show her both.
I like your dress, he murmured.
Oh, it's just a really little something I pulled on. His lips curved against her hair.
It suits you. Not everyone wears white so well, or with such powerful accessories.
Yeah, it's a stunner, she said, making him laugh.
So is my wife.
Again, she angled her head back.
So you're married?
I am, yes, right down to the marrow. You?
I got talked into it. It's working out pretty well.
She laid a hand on his cheek. He's got this way of making me feel I'm the only person in the world. When I'm with my wife, when I'm holding her, she is. She pressed her cheek against his, closed her eyes as they danced.
No one ever made me the reason before him. No one else ever made me the one.
She changed my life the moment she walked into it. She's the reason and the one.
I don't know if I believed in love before, but I know I didn't understand it. And now.
And now. This time she tipped back her head, took his lips, and gave herself to the now.
He hit the release on her weapon harness, slipped it off, letting it slide to the floor before he circled her back to the center of the room, of the moment. Together, they lowered to the floor while the music beat, the light shimmered, the fire snapped. He let his hands roam. That long back, the narrow torso, over smooth skin under thin white cotton. The tough, disciplined muscles never failed to arouse. His woman was a fighter, a brawler, a tireless warrior, and still could offer him the soft and the sweet. Her hands roamed as his did, the short, unpainted nails digging in, letting him know his body, his touch, his needs pleased her. She smelled of soap and winter wind, tasted of woman and warmth. He tugged the tank away to cup her breast, small, firm, lovely, in his hand. Her heart bumped beneath his fingers. She tangled her legs with his, let herself float on the gentle surf of rising senses. The feel of his hands, always clever, now patient, on her skin, his scent, one she'd recognize among thousands. The taste of him as her lips skimmed along his jaw. All coalesced into one, into him, while the fire sizzled and snapped, while the music drifted through the air. She slipped his sweater up and away, wanting skin to skin now, craving heart to heart. Used hands and mouth to saturate herself with him, to indulge herself, to take what was only hers. When he pressed her back, she flowed with it. When he gripped her hands, she linked her fingers with his and held on. Held on as with mouth alone, he turned her body into fire. One quick gasp escaped her, a gasp that shuddered into a moan as he churned her system into glorious chaos. Feasting on her breasts, his teeth adding a tiny exquisite pain, he made her tremble. He wanted her to quake, wanted to feel her quake and break beneath him. He needed to drive her into helplessness before her power whipped back and conquered him. She would give, he knew, as his mouth played over that lean torso. She would cry out in surrender and yield all. So her hips pumped up, body arched, breath sobbed, as his tongue slid over her, into her. Hot. Impossible pleasure broke over her, swamped her. Helpless, yes,
Helplessly, she rode the torrent to its dizzying peak, trapped there in a kind of glorious madness before tumbling down, weak and dazed. He exploited. He plundered. And she, still wrecked, could only writhe under the assault. The next orgasm ripped through her, velvet claws. And still, she tried to say his name as her mind whimpered, "Too much, it's too much." But when the word slipped from her, the word was more. So he used his hands on her and gave her more. Half crazed now, he moved up her body, his only clear thought to take, to have. "Wait." Her heavy eyes met his. "Wait. Eve." He pressed his lips to her throat, prepared to beg if he must. She gathered what little strength and sanity she had left, rolled, simply laying her head on his chest while she found her breath. "Eve." Fighting the animal clawing inside him, he gripped her hips. "I need you." "I know." She rose up, looking into his eyes as she straddled him. "I know." Letting out a long sigh as she took him in. "I know." Pressing one of his hands to her heart, she began to move. "I know." So her power whipped back, built. She surrounded him, accepted him, conquered him. When she melted, heated honey against him, they lay together, tangled, dazed, in the center of the ballroom. Fleetingly, he wondered if he'd ever not think of this when they had the room full of people, food, lights, and music. He also wondered how he'd find the energy to carry her to their actual bed if, as he thought she might, she fell asleep on top of him. Then she stirred, let out a long, low sound of satisfaction. "Well, that's another checked off the list." Adoring her, he laughed. "You have a list." "It's just a mental list, for now. How many rooms do you figure we have yet to hit?" "Adore her? Hell, he bloody well worshipped her. I'll have to do a count." "Do that." She pushed up enough to look down at him. "Because we have to hit them all. Big house, so it'll take a while. But we have to hit them all, even if we hit the last one when we're old and creaky." He skimmed a finger down her chin. "We might save one for when we are, as a kind of incentive and reward." "That's a good idea. I like it." "I think I can get up now, especially since I don't have to worry about the clothes I left scattered around out there, because, hey, summer set free." She rolled off. "I've got to get my stuff, though. Badge, link, like that." "You get that. I'll get what's in here, including your weapon." "Deal." Eyes still heavy, face still flushed, she got to her feet. "It's a good deal," she said when he got to his. "All around." He took her hand, kissed her fingers. "The best of deals." "Now I'm walking in a ballroom naked," she said as she crossed the gleaming floor. "How many people can say that?" 4. Eve woke in the pre-dawn dark with a weight on her chest. When she opened her sleep-blurred eyes, she made out a silhouette that had her reaching for her weapon with one hand, balling the other into a fist. Before she punched the shadow, as her brain cleared enough to remember she wasn't wearing her weapon or anything else, the shadow let out a familiar, growly sort of sound. Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? Lights on, 10%. In the low light, Galahad's bicolored eyes stared, hard and steely, into hers. What's your problem? She hauled him up, dumped him on the bed beside her. Those odd feline eyes only narrowed. The growly sound clicked up to an actual growl. Watch it, pal. I'm bigger than you. Eve scrubbed her hands over her face, called for the time. The time is 5:33. Current temperature is 19 degrees. Eve shot a finger at the cat. I had another 30 coming to me. Galahad's response was a snarl. Since she didn't have Rourke as backup, already up and buying a solar system or selling a small country, Eve imagined, she rolled out of bed, snagged the rober husband, who inexplicably thought of every damn thing, must have tossed on the foot of the bed. As she pulled the robe on, the cat stalked to the edge of the bed. Sat. Stared. Look, you're creeping me, okay? Knock it off. She walked to the wall panel, opened it to the auto chef, programmed the first cup of life-sustaining coffee, and got it. No Somerset, and Rourke in one of his Emperor of the Business World meetings. Still, the man who thought of every damn thing usually fed the cat when the house was Somerset free. Turning, taking that first gulp of good, strong black coffee, Eve eyed the cat. Are you bullshitting me, Tubby? He jumped off the bed, a definite thud, sat, stared. His bullshit generally took the tack of sucking up, rubbing that pudgy body against legs, looking sad or appealing. Now he just looked pissed. Righteously. Okay, I'm buying it. She programmed kibble, and though he didn't deserve it after costing her a half hour down, she added some salmon. When she set it down, he strolled over, tail swishing. His body language clearly stated, it's about damn time. Yeah, you're freaking welcome. Eve took the coffee with her into the shower. Fully awake, considerably less grumpy, she came out to see Rourke standing in the bedroom. Dressed in one of his impeccable suits, he gestured at the empty bowl across the room while the cat wound between his legs and sang his sad song in pathetic meows. I can see the bloody empty bowl right there. I've eyes. And no doubt if I lowered myself to take a whiff, I'd smell tuna or salmon on your breath. Salmon, Eve confirmed. The cat glanced over, obviously concluded the jig was up. He strolled toward the fire, sat, and began to wash. You didn't feed him before, right? I didn't, Rourke confirmed. As he was both sprawled out and snoring, and I knew I wouldn't be more than 40 minutes or so. He woke me up, sitting his tonnage on my chest and staring holes through my brain. If we put a micro AC on his level, he might learn to operate it. He doesn't have to, Eve pointed out. He operates us. Entirely too true. Eve went back to the auto chef, put herself in charge of breakfast, which meant a Somerset and oatmeal-free day. While she contemplated her choices, Rourke switched on the financial reports, muted the sound. He stood a moment, studying what would always remain incomprehensible to her, while she settled on berries, bacon, and, pancakes. She topped it off with a pot of coffee. Did you add a planet to your collection? She asked, as she carried plates to the table of the sitting area. Not this morning. I'll get the rest. She sat, drenching her pancakes with syrup, while he brought over the berries and coffee. "So, what's on your plate today?" she asked him. "Besides breakfast." "As it happens, I just agreed to pay a quick visit to an ag complex I have an interest in Bristol."
"Where's Bristol?"
"England. Since that requires considerable shuffling of the day's schedule in any case, I'll likely check on the rehab in Italy before heading back."
"A pity you have a case," he added, as he poured coffee for both of them.
"Or we could take a day or two." To the bone, Eve knew she'd never take to the idea of casually shuttling off to Europe.
"Do you need a day or two?
For the work, I mean."
"No, a few hours. It's more for public relations than work in Bristol. For Italy, I think it's time for an unexpected drop-in. I expect you'll be in the field quite a bit today."
"Starting with the morgue."
"Lovely. My best to Morris, of course."
Considering, Eve ate more pancakes.
"You go to Europe, I go to the morgue. That about sums it, right?
And yet here we are."
Rourke patted her leg.
"Sitting here having breakfast, while our cat calculates if he can manage to snag some bacon."
"He can't."
Lifting a slice, Eve gave the cat the same quality of stare he'd given her, and crunched in. Once she'd hit her limit on pancakes, she went to her closet to dress and to line up her morning agenda. Morgue, then Cop Central to put her board together there, check any reports, update. Schedule a consult with Mira, get Mira the data. A visit to the victim's apartment, Eve added. See how she lived, fill in some blanks. A talk with the people in charge of the auditions, the casting. Another talk with the vet assistant who took the bogus emergency. As she planned it out, she pulled on black trousers, a white shirt, yanked a gray V-neck sweater over that when she remembered the temperature. Shifted to grab a black jacket at random, but Rourke beat her to it. He stepped in, took another, a sort of tweed maybe, of deep forest green with touches of gray and black woven through. "There's an undertone of green in the sweater," he pointed out. She frowned down at it.
"It's gray.
With a green undertone." She shrugged, took the jacket from him, then deliberately grabbed brown boots.
"You'd be breaking my heart if I didn't know you're winding me up."
"Serve you right if I wore them anyway." She switched them for black. "I need to go deal with the schedule changes, which will likely have Cairo set her hair, or maybe mine, on fire." Eve sat to pull on the boots, imagined Rourke's steady-as-a-rock admin would handle it all without flames.
"I'll see you when we're both back.
Meanwhile, take care of my cop." He bent over to kiss her.
"I will, if you take care of my traveling gazillionaire."
"That's a deal." Alone, she strapped on her weapon, filled her pockets. She gave Galahad a quick scratch and rub, no point holding grudges, then jogged downstairs. Coat, scarf, snowflake cap, then out into the cold where her car sat, engine and heater already running, thanks to the man who thought of everything. And, thanks to the cat, she ran 30 ahead of schedule. No ad blimps blasting yet, she noted, and traffic at the edge of insane rather than fully over the line. Some commuter trams, overhead and on the street, carted the night shift one way, the early shift another. Eve used her wrist unit, dictated a text to Peabody. "Skip the morgue. Go straight to Central. Get me a consult with Mira and clear the way for us to go through the Vic's apartment." More time saved, she thought as she played weave and dodge on her route downtown. Time she'd spend getting that subscription list for the Vid Palace, running down the names. Somebody knew you, Chanel. Knew a lot about you, Eve thought. Co-workers aren't ringing so far. Exes aren't ringing. A neighbor, maybe. Somebody who belonged to the same gym or shopped at the same market. A friendly woman, everybody said. A happy one. Friendly and happy tend to talk to people. Neighbors, she thought again. Markets, a gym if she used one. Bank, beauty salon, and the Vid Palace. Somebody you see regularly, but more important, who sees you. Before you know it, you've got a target on your back. Or on the base of your skull. Those angles played in her head all the way downtown. When she walked through the white tunnel of the morgue, her boot steps echoed. She heard muted voices behind a set of doors, smelled bad coffee, something fried. Hash brown cake, she decided, which somehow managed to be both disgusting and delicious. She stepped into Morris's theater, and a chorus of voices singing about making the match. Early and bright, Morris commented, turning the music down to a murmur. He stood beside Ryland's body in a navy suit with thread-like stripes of maroon. His shirt matched the stripes, and the tie played both colors together in a pattern she thought they called, for whatever reason, paisley. He'd braided his long, dark hair, then twined it with a maroon cord. His eyes, exotic, sort of beautiful, smiled at her from behind his safety goggles. Ryland's chest, already spread, lay open to him. The cat woke me up, so I got an early start. Our Galahad's not ill, I hope. No, fat and healthy. He wanted breakfast, and apparently we're there to serve. Anything I can use yet? As you see, I haven't gotten far, but I can tell you that at this point, I see a healthy, well-proportioned female who took care of her body. Though slightly underweight, as many are in her profession, she has exceptional muscle tone. A lovely face as well. And no signs I found, thus far, of any surgical enhancements. Your TOD concurs with mine, he added. She was enjoying some lightly salted popcorn and Diet Coke when she died. I don't get how anybody enjoys popcorn if it's only lightly salted, but it takes all kinds. COD? I'd suspect the ice pick plunged into her brain stem. Ice pick, Eve nodded. You're looking for one with a spike about 3 inches long, with a diameter of 3 millimeters. It has a wooden sheath, as I found microscopic traces of wood in the wound. That's good. That's helpful. He ordered his work screen on. Eve watched a spine, and what she assumed was the brainstem attached, revolve in bright yellow and blue. The spike entered between the first and second vertebrae, penetrated the brainstem, disrupting the central nervous system in a slightly upward angle. With that penetration, the brain ceased to transmit orders to breathe, to regulate body temperature and blood pressure, heart rate. That cessation would result in, most likely, a short seizure as the body, cut off from the brain, objected, you could say. Death followed quickly, a matter of seconds. How good would you have to be to make that shot in that spot? A bit of practice. Morris lifted his shoulders. From reasonably close range on a sitting target, you wouldn't need more than a rudimentary search to know where to aim, and your aim could be off a bit and produce the same results. If you're thinking the killer needed medical training or expertise, I'd have to say no. May have had, certainly, but wouldn't need it. Okay. Hands in pockets, she wandered. Okay. Ice picks are easy to come by. They use them in bars, commercial kitchens,